This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Junks on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. Happy Wednesday morning to you.
What's up?
What's up? I am Cakes. You can follow me at Money Metal Cakes on Twitter. I'm joined by Jason Bishop.
Hello.
Hello, sir.
Voila.
Joined by Eric Bickle.
Good morning.
Hey, Bickle decided to come back to work.
Hello,
hey, slept
Mr.
in.
Bickle?
Slept in all day
did
yesterday.
Did I sleep in? We were running around, did a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, just slept in.
Let's I think I did sleep in a little bit.
Sleeping in is a glorious thing.
I'm not going to lie, I did sleep in a little bit.
Especially unexpected sleep-ins during the week.
Yeah,
He just decided, yeah, didn't feel like going to work.
No, it was a scheduled day off. Something that we had to do. I had to do a little traveling. I was in a hurting hotel bed, though. I don't know how you guys are. But when you like the first night in a hotel is always the worst night, and so then when it's just a one day quick trip,
yeah,
you don't really get to recover from it.
Guaranteed a bad night of sleep.
Yeah, I mean, I did sleep in a little bit. I mean, I slept to like 8.
Good.
You toss and turn a lot.
Look, if you have a day off, you deserve to sleep as late as you want.
Right. Today, this morning, when my alarm went off,
right,
I didn't know what that thing was going because it's just like this digital beep 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 beep. Beep, beep, and I didn't really know what it was.
You couldn't process it.
I didn't.
You didn't trust the process.
Because normally I wake up before the alarm.
Yeah.
I'd say the alarm wakes me up, I don't know about you guys, maybe a half dozen times a year. So, you know, how many days do you work? 250 days a year or something?
My alarm gets no workout.
Right? You're just up before it.
Mine wakes me up basically every day.
That's good. That means you're sleeping good.
I have been more fitful, generally. Like, I woke up this morning at 3:38.
Right.
And I kind of smiled and said, I got another, basically an hour to sleep.
Right.
I was a little bit giddy.
So Bickle decided to take off yesterday because he wanted to sleep in. JP wants to sleep in today.
I think JP legitimately.
Today.
I mean, what's going on? Am I going to take off tomorrow?
Well, you take off tomorrow and then I'll take off Friday.
Or we can flip flop.
I'll take Friday.
I'll take the 3-day
weekend.
You take
Thursday. That'll be the move.
I'd like to take Friday because Thursday night's going to be a big night.
What day is today?
It's true.
Thursday night's a huge night.
Dropping the puck nice and early. The NHL doesn't mess around.
NFL draft and dropping the puck.
Caps, Pens, game one, Thursday.
Yeah.
Get ready. Buckle up. Catch your breath. It starts again tomorrow night.
And we did say yesterday that we were hoping that they would push the series to Saturday, but they decided, no, we're not going to do that. This is the third consecutive year that they've started that series on NFL draft night.
I'm actually okay with it. I can double screen it. I can put the NFL draft on my laptop and follow right along with the Caps on the big screen.
I just like to focus on one thing at a time, and it's just going to make it harder. But it is what it is. Thursday night's a big night.
You can multitask. You can do it.
Barely.
Some people claim that your brain can't multitask. There's no such thing as that. It can be done.
It's hard to do.
I think you can do it.
So Thursday night's a big night. Oh, JP
is
here.
Very night.
Oh, he didn't sleep
in. I thought you were sleeping in today.
Get a free breakfast.
Just taking the day off.
Sound the Bethesda Bagels alarm.
Perfect day for it. Yeah, get a free breakfast on Bethesda Bagels Day here on the Junks.
Hey, you can tip him instead of paying for breakfast. Just tip the guy.
We never tip him, do we? It's a big oversight. Maybe we should pass the hat a little bit and tip the guy. I mean, I don't even think
he would want the money.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that just a squeaker in you coming out?
Well, what are you going to give him that's going to make it worthwhile?
I don't know.
It's going to change his life.
Five a man?
Nothing's going to change his life.
Wouldn't you want to walk out of here with 30 bucks you didn't have?
I don't know if you would. I give enough money to Homewood Suite valets.
Like I've heard on this station and other stations before, not a sermon, just a thought.
Right.
Yeah. That's all.
Anyway.
Just throwing it out there.
How you doing,
JP? Do you ever leave your car at Homewood Suites when you're waiting for the lady?
No.
The morning is the lady.
I probably should.
No, I go,
but
I tell her I'm there.
No, but sometimes you have to wait. Like if they're just parking your car,
right,
you'll have to wait a few minutes.
Until they come up.
And I've thought of leaving the car, but then you see just shady people walking around.
Yeah, just talks.
Like you're going to just leave your car wide open.
Mm-hmm.
No, I've never had to do that.
I was a little.
She's always either in her office or in the lobby.
The second I woke up this morning, I was insanely jelly of Valdez drab t-shirt and EB because I walked into my bathroom and just rain cascading down on the roof. And I said, well, I'm going to have to, God forbid, I'm going to have to walk in this rain for a whole block after I drop my car at Homewood Suites. And then I was like, do I bring an umbrella? I mean, do I really want to lug an umbrella to work?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just don't want to do that. Luckily, the rain had subsided by the time I got to
D.C. I just can't believe that Jason tips on the way in and the way out every
morning. It's a lot of waste. It's a lot of effort.
You got to go. You got
John
go.
And I do a monthly, and then Dave or whoever splits it amongst
He doesn't get sized for lump payments.
Yeah.
He likes the nickel and dime. That's why he goes to the
but
gas station every day.
He has to be cashless at times, or he maybe only has big bills.
He's got to always have cash.
What do you guys tip per month?
100.
100, unless you have a week of vacation.
100?
And I did that recently, 80.
See, I'm saving
really?
Money. I'm saving
yes.
money
I just
by doing
the
what 100. I'm doing.
I mean, I love the service, but why would I tip for a week that I'm not there? That just makes no sense to me.
Smart.
I'm saving money because I tip $2 drop off, $2 pickup. So that's four. It's 20. It's 80 bucks a month. I'm saving
so you're
$20
saving
bucks
20
a month.
Bucks. Sure.
Yeah, brilliant.
That's yeah, right. It's
but
a
you
lot
have
of,
to have that $2.
It's a lot of
you have
poop
to have the $4.
Okay, but I'm still saving
day.
The 20. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll give them three.
Now
on Fridays when I'm happy,
yeah,
I
you're
give them
frisky.
Three.
They
yeah,
probably three. Like you more, even though they have been told that the money coming from John and I will be split.
I don't know what they do with the money.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I know they say they're going
to
split it.
I mean,
but
I've given it to the guy at the front desk before. And I've told them to give it to the valet manager, and I just hope it makes it there. I mean, it's just an envelope with cash in it. I mean, it could be.
I can't imagine that when I drop my car off and I give the girl $2 or $3, she's actually putting in some pool of money. I can't imagine she's doing that. But maybe
yeah,
I'm wrong.
I don't know. Don't
maybe
know
I'm
how
wrong.
That works.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, apparently I missed a big to-do yesterday, big fight, I guess, behind the scenes, right? Because I see our friend Lisa from NBC Sports Washington is here.
Unscheduled?
I don't,
she's in the AWOD seat.
I don't see Adam. Don't know where he is. I saw some.
That's no longer his seat.
I saw some allusion to this on social media yesterday. That the circle of trust was broken. So, I don't know. Drabby, you want to kind of fill me in on what's going on here?
Well, Lisa's here because she's now the voice of the millennials on the show.
Which, because
very good.
Because
like
Adam
that.
Had said he was the voice of the millennials.
Yesterday, while he was busy trying to throw Valdez and I under the bus. And
he was
say,
so busy doing that.
All right. We do in this
By
room.
The way, I'm sure Lisa's happy that she had to drive from Baltimore to get here by 5:30
a.m. She didn't seem that size. Yeah.
Well, she probably got up at 3:30. Lisa, did you get up at 3:30 or 4?
I got up at 3.
Oh. And you're making her do this?
She smells way better than
yeah. yeah. I can imagine.
So everybody yesterday thinks this is a bit. It's not a bit. Valdez and I are angry.
Right.
And yesterday on the show, if you don't work in radio, you don't work in this room, maybe you wouldn't understand. But what Adam did yesterday by going on the air.
He crossed the line.
And telling the junkies that all we do in this room is talk crap about them, which isn't true.
Which you probably do.
Well, which, I mean, we've known that for a long time. And we've said it.
It's not
true. I can see the peanut gallery back there. Every time somebody says something in there.
All right, the Matt and Matt show. Yeah. It runs daily.
Believe me, that's been going on for years. And it really doesn't matter who the producers are. I think that generally
happens.
Well,
we talk about the show, but we do it in a either a producing way or we're just doing bits.
Right.
Nothing's malicious that we've ever said in this room.
Yeah, whatever. No, believe us, our feelings aren't hurt.
All right, well, I wouldn't think it would be. But Adam yesterday tried to, you know, say that that's what was going on.
Right. Why was he throwing you under the bus?
Because it was deflection to, he always does this.
He was
topic is about him and his lack of manners. He said,
yo, Paige, can
over.
I get a pick?
Because after the show, when we were taking pictures
can I get
with Paige.
A pic?
Oh, so you're breaking his balls.
First of all, he pronounced her name wrong to her face.
Yeah,
during
the after-show interview.
Spiranek? Is that how?
Spiranek. Not yeah. Spiranek. It was a whole thing
it's
yesterday.
It's not Spiraniak or Spiranek. It's Spiranek.
It was dovetailing Spiranek. Off the Bob McGilligut, McGillicuddy thing.
And JP botched it like 100 times. So then
during the interview? Again?
No, I think
leading up.
Sporanic.
Yeah.
But for years, as long as I've ever heard of her, we've pronounced it one way.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they say it's Sporanic.
Right.
Well, that's the way she pronounces it.
So. Well, it's besides the point. But right. Adam didn't say, you know, thanks for the picture afterwards or anything.
He was just a douche.
So we were needling him.
Yeah, we were.
Right.
But then he went on the air and on Twitter and said that all we do is bully him. Like, we're not friends. We abuse him, basically.
What is he playing into the anti-bullying campaign
of Paige?
He's
exactly what he was doing. Well, she was just...
He wanted Paige to come to his defense?
No,
well,
this is after.
No, this is after she's
gone. This is after she's gone.
Right.
This is him just deflecting.
You're making it more complicated. First of all, we just played it on Best of the Junkies.
Yeah.
Valdez just called him out and said he serves no purpose in there.
Well, no, so that's not... Well, that's not true. I
but
really
you did
have
say
no,
you wanted him out of there.
I want him out of here because I don't trust saying stuff to Drab or saying stuff to Lisa.
Right.
Him regurgitating it to whoever's listening.
Right.
For instance, Eric, do you want... Do you want Adam to know why you weren't in the show yesterday?
I don't care.
I know it's not a big deal, but
get out.
I know it's not a big deal. It's not a big state secret.
I know, but if you don't want
to put out there,
exactly.
The air. Yeah,
I think we talk about a lot of stuff on the show that during the commercial breaks that we wouldn't necessarily want people to know what we're saying.
And now you don't. And now I don't trust
saying it in front of Adam
because he might put it on Twitter.
He might put it on Twitter. He might spew it on air, and I could dump it, but.
He's going to get angry at some point, and he's going to spill the beans
right,
to everybody.
He's going to unleash.
Or he's going to go to his broskies in Arlington and tell them everything that's going on in their lives. I just don't trust him.
I'm not confident.
So he can just sit over there, right? Is it by the dumb machine?
Yeah, the TriCaster.
The TriCaster. Does he even use that anymore?
That's what Ewad did.
Right.
I don't see the reason why he was in there. I go in there during the breaks, and all that I see on his computer are about 8 tabs of soccer games, tennis rankings, and his fantasy.
The whole reason he's in there is for friend time with Drabby. Well,
correct.
That's so the no only purpose.
Well, also, he tried to weasel his way on the air.
Right.
Yeah,
I'll make a prediction. And I don't care either way because life goes on. If he's not in there for like 8 weeks, he'll quit. He'll quit. And it's fine. But he'll quit.
His actual job responsibilities are way back there where he cuts his videos at his workstation.
Well, yeah. JP, you're making it a lot about his job and what his you know, work is entails when it's mostly about trust with us at this point.
So where is he right now as we speak?
I pray for you to quit.
I think he's around the corner.
Yeah.
He's here. Now, CK said yesterday that it was 6-on-1 and that he just tried to fire back and he fired back with the wrong thing.
So CK was defending him?
A little bit.
Yeah.
CK has a soft spot for him. There's no question about it.
I'm sure.
He definitely has a soft spot.
Well, I would ask CK if he would feel comfortable talking about Entercom business in front of him. That it shouldn't necessarily be out into the public.
It's a good response.
Look, we're laying it on thick, but he really pissed us off.
So is Lisa here just throwing us a bone today?
Or there's no way she's going to be here every single day.
We're going to try to bribe her for a week, or what are we going to do?
Tomorrow we can have someone else fill the seat.
Oh. See, the thing is, one of his retorts was.
I mean, she's welcome every day, but if it's a pain in her ass, she's got to drive from Baltimore.
The thing that you're missing is one of his retorts.
There's no way Lisa's getting up at 3 a.m. every day.
Because what happens.
Not unless you bump her salary. No, I can see it in your face.
What happens to Adam every time is there's a topic. He then shifts the topic, and he tried to shift the topic to Valdez and Drab are two-faced, and they talk behind our back, right? And then when we moved off of that, then he said, well, we need him for the show because he's the millennial voice of the show.
Right, which is the most absurd thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, that's just to see how comical. It goes.
JP, this is just you trying to take me off mic again. There's an AWOD army. We did this vote. I won the vote. They want me to be contributing part of the show. I'm a millennial
Adam.
Voice.
Who cares about a millennial voice?
I'm a millennial voice.
He does.
That's going to be his lasting legacy.
Does he honestly think that there are people out there clamoring for
that might be Adam's last. That might be Adam's last words on the show. I'm the millennial voice.
Yes. That's his parting shot.
Man.
So that's what you missed.
I missed a good one.
And the thing is,
he's going to be pouting. Is he already pouting?
Probably. So pouting
sad.
Yesterday?
Oh, was he so sad?
Oh, so much pouting.
Yeah.
He was moping around the office.
Yeah.
And Drab and I had a lot of conversation about this after the show yesterday.
Right.
And I think Adam's, in radio, he's kind of a silver spoon kid because he's had a mic in front of him ever since he's been with the show.
He's never had to grind.
He's never had
to answer phones.
You know, it's not like Fairfax when you're in the back and you have no one to talk to.
Right.
And you got to try.
Get nearly killed by a car driving through the window.
He's lucky to be here.
And you got to figure out, you know, how to get on air and what to say that's engaging on air. He's just had a mic in front of him the entire time.
Right.
And he can chime in whenever.
Typical spoiled millennial. Really. Typical.
We don't really care because I know EB gets a kick out of him. If you guys, it's your show, you bring him in, have him be a character on the show. I just, right now, we don't want him sitting next to us.
Yeah.
So if you want to bring him in and talk to him,
look,
that's,
if you don't want
you
him
can
in
bring
that
him
room,
in, that's fine.
I don't
kick him right
out of
the kicking
room.
Him off the
we're
show.
Fine with it.
We're just kicking him out of the room.
Put him on because he just looks stupid and he's just something you're killing a segment and you see him and see what dummy's doing. You know, but no, there's really nothing more.
I think it works best. That's what we did with Eric, E-Wad. The original Wad.
Yeah.
Didn't sit in studio.
But I will say this.
These guys just end up fighting in studio every day. I've told Adam, why engage? Because he shows up to work and immediately Valdez and Drab pounce on him about his tweets, about what he did last night, what he's been eating.
But what Adam all... Here's what he fails to realize. He'll always be the lowest rung on the ladder, and he can't handle that.
Yeah.
It's just what it is here.
Yeah.
There's no way around it.
Then Valdez had the idea. Maybe if Adam ever wants to get back in good gracious, he could come
good
on
graces.
The... Good graces. Sorry. Yeah. Thoroughly.
Dummy.
He could come on the air and tell publicly his bosses all the crap he's talked about him behind their back.
Right.
Blue Shorts and Mike Gartel.
Right. Oh, and he does talk
do
a lot
like
of trash
that.
About those guys?
I know some things he said about them.
So maybe
he had a false claim that he never says anything negative, that he's the nicest person
right,
here.
Right. Well, we also could use this as an opportunity to super bully him. You know what I mean? Like, remember when we tarred and feathered and we did the whole bit with the one intern? I mean,
the blocker.
Yeah, there's something down the road.
First ever intern.
There's something down the road.
You can't do that because he's using this whole new... movement of anti-bullying.
Because he would document it, and then he would go to HR.
Seem like
I would be very careful of him tattling.
Plus, right now,
to
and then.
HR people, other people. So I would be very careful.
I mean, I'd give him what he wants anyway. Attention dollars. That's why he's really moping. He wants, when the camera flashes on the production studio, he wants that camera time. He wants that mic time.
Right.
For him to be in Siberia, it's killing him.
Well, it's the worst. It's the worst. When you're desperate for airtime and no one even wants you in the room.
He's stranded in TriCaster, Virginia. That's where he is right now.
I would have thought TriCaster was an actual town in Virginia.
It might be. Look it up.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Game 5 against the Raptors tonight in Toronto is Kara Lawson, color analyst on NBC Sports Washington. Good morning, Kara.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's it going?
Hey, what's going on?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm anxiously awaiting tip tonight.
Are you like us? Do you have no idea what Wizards team is going to show up? That's how I feel. I have no idea.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Me neither. That's why I'm anxiously awaiting, you know. Coming up here, the first two games, Toronto was excellent and wasn't sure what to expect from the guys coming home. And then they played two really good games. One of the best closing stretches that I'd seen them play all year in Game 4 after Bradley Beal fouled out. And here we are, tied 2-2. So I'm anxious to see how they play on the road here in Game 5.
You think they figured anything out defensively? Because Toronto's, especially their bench, was so good offensively from the perimeter. And Washington was terrible in closing out on those shooters, but they were much better in games 3 and 4. But I don't know. Maybe it's the home court advantage. I mean, Toronto was, 34-7 in that building for a reason. So they obviously feed off that energy. But maybe the Wizards figured something out. I don't know.
Yeah, there's definitely some tweaks that they've made. About the first game and a half of the series, they were really aggressive on the ball screen actions, particularly with DeRozan, bringing two to him. And he was getting the ball out of his hands quickly, which meant Toronto had numbers out of that pick-and-roll action, and right. They were getting open threes out of it. So 16 threes in Game 1, 11 threes in the first half of Game 2. And then they went to more switching at the second half, really about halfway through the third quarter, Game 2. And that kept the integrity of their defense and enabled them to give up less three-point shots, and I think that certainly helped with their defense. But more than anything, I think just their pace was a lot better in Game 3 and 4, pushing the basketball more, getting easy opportunities, and And really, some of our guys just played better. I mean, Bradley wasn't very good in games 1 and 2, and he was excellent in games 3 and 4. March wasn't very good in games 1 and 2. He was good. Kelly Oubre was much better defensively in games 3 and 4. So some of it was just a function of guys playing better at home. Hopefully they can carry that over tonight.
Kara, how does Otto get more involved, only averaging 8 attempts per game in this series? He scored 12 twice, 8 in another game, and 9 in another. How do we get him out of this 8 or 9 attempts per game range? Do we see that going forward?
Yeah, see, this is a really hard thing because what Toronto's trying to do is they're trying to stay home on shooters, and they're trying to not let Washington's catch-and-shoot guys get open looks. And that's what Otto is. Otto mostly is a catch-and-shoot guy. You're not going to see him breaking down defenses like you see John doing or like you see Bradley doing. So when John drives or there's a ball screen in the middle of the floor, Toronto's not helping from Washington shooters. They're allowing John to get an open look, or they're allowing that post player to get an open look. And that's different from most of the coverages that they saw all regular season, where Otto would be able to cut in the weak side or Otto would be able to get a driving kick three. So that it's to generate more offense for Otto, to answer your question, it's got to come from different ways. Like transition is a way that Otto can get going if Washington gets stops or if Washington's able to force turnovers. Offensive rebounding is a way Otto can get going. And then his normal ways where he gets weak side cuts or where he's able to get a catch and shoot. But it's different. That's what Toronto is choosing to take away. And I don't know if you take away catch and shoots for Otto, that he's going to be able to generate well over 14 field goal attempts. That's just not his game. So I agree. I mean, it would be nice to have to see Otto get a 24-25 point game. We'll see. But that's a clear line in the sand that Toronto's trying to draw to not give him too many looks.
Joined by Kara Lawson, the voice of the Wizards on NBC Sports Washington. We had a couple callers wondering about Thomas Satoransky, and what I said is flat out, Lawson's better than him. What's your take on how Lawson, who comes over from China, is getting kind of the bench minutes, which aren't a ton because John's playing the majority at point, over Satoransky?
Every series is different. And the playoffs are different. And I think Sato's had a terrific year. What Washington needs in this series off the bench is someone, when John's out, that can break down the defense, that has a quickness, that can get into the lane and create. Because of all those things I talked about how they're staying home at shooters. And so I think that's why Scott Brooks has gone with Lawson in that capacity, because of his ability to break people down. Also, in this series, size or lack of size is not an issue for the backup point guard, because Toronto's guards are small as well. Lowry, Van Vliet hasn't played obviously that much this series, but you're not worried that Ty's not that big. And for Sato, he's a guy. He's a ball mover. He can knock down the 3-point shot, but he's not necessarily going to break you down. And I think that's what Washington needs more of in this series with them staying home on 3-point shooters. So, it's a part of it. It's a rotation, and, it's something that I think has been the right call by Scott Brooks. Even though Shadow's had a great year, I think it's been the right call because of what Ty can provide.
Do you feel like the Wizards have to win tonight to win the series?
No, I don't. I feel like, I remember coming home after game 2, and all I was thinking was, gosh, they're really good. Toronto's really good. Okay, they're number one seed for a reason. But I just sure wish that the Wizards would be able to provide a little bit of game pressure and a little bit of series pressure in order to see how they are, see how good they are. Because when you make a number one seed feel pressure, sometimes they crack. And here's a team that represents not just the city guys, but an entire country. This is the only NBA team in Canada. This is the one seed. This is the year that everyone's saying that you can beat LeBron and you can get to the finals out of the East, right? This is the most chatter that we've heard about any other teams outside of Cleveland in quite some time. It's just been a foregone conclusion that it's a Cavs. Everyone knows that. And you have to think that there's a lot of pressure on Toronto, thinking this is their year to get to the finals, not just get out of the first round, but get to the finals. And I don't know. I think if the Wizards were able to get it to a game seven, you don't know where that type of pressure is going to manifest itself. So to answer your question, no, I don't think that they have to win tonight to win the series, but it sure would be feel pretty good to win and come home for game six. Yeah.
Kara, how much do you think the Drake-John Wall subplot plays in? Because we know that John Wall, like, he likes to get the home crowd involved. But if Drake's sitting there courtside, like I'm assuming he will be, and he's a guy that basically told John Wall that the Raps are going to sweep the Wiz, he takes that sort of thing personally. What sort of, you know, back and forth do you envision between John Wall and Drake during the game tonight?
Yeah, John likes to generate things, like a lot of players do, that are, me against the world type thing, or this person doesn't believe in me, or anything like that. And that's a core piece to kind of what motivates him. And so I think doing that with Drake certainly serves as motivation. I don't think it impacts him negatively at all. He'll go back and forth with Drake during the game, absolutely, but I don't think it'll cause him to not be focused on what's going on. Obviously, they love Drake here in Toronto, and he's very active on the sidelines, yelling at the opposing players. But yeah, I think it's just a fun subplot. I don't really take too much from it. I mean, those guys are friends, and they're going to talk trash.
Kara, did your level of fame rise after the semifinal game on the women's side for your non-reaction that went viral after the game-winning shot? What was that like for you?
Well, one, I was thankful, because if you're going to have a meme, I guess, or whatever it is, at least you want it to be semi-flattering and not something that's embarrassing. So I thought, hey, well, if you're going to have one, it's not bad. When I met up with the team, the day after the Final Four, I met up with the guys in Houston. They played the Rockets a couple days after the Final Four. And I walked into the lobby, and these people that I didn't even know came up to me and were like, oh, I saw you on the video. That was so funny. Like, and that's all everyone with the Wizards wanted to talk about was how I stayed so calm or what was going on, and ask about it. So I would say for a little while there, yes. Like the week after, yes. But since then, I haven't really heard too much about it.
If I told people, and you can talk about this, your job at that point is kind of to let the moment speak for itself. It's on TV, so you're letting it breathe.
Yeah, it's kind of twofold, right? You're letting it breathe, but also in the semifinal, when Arike Ogunbowale, the close one of the game, hit the game-winning shot against UConn, there was still 1 second left. And I knew UConn didn't have a timeout. So I was analyzing. I was figuring out what they were going to do, what the play was going to what was going to happen, because I knew it would happen right away because there was no timeout. And then, obviously, they threw the full-court pass. The UConn kid almost made the layup. So there's still a lot to analyze of what's happening, and you want to make sure you're on top of it, because as an analyst, just like as a player and just like as a coach, a lot of times you're judged more on the end of game if it's a close game than you are during the course of the game. So you want to make sure you get it right. So that's what I was doing. I was just focused on getting it right for everybody at home.
And that was in contrast to Rebecca Lobo, right, who went nuts.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we're different personalities, too. I mean, that's the thing is, I don't want to say I'm more calm. She's calm too, but I'm definitely more poker face than she is in general. So
you had the Jay Wright reaction, like, no big deal.
Yes, Jay Wright. Yep,
exactly.
I'll take it. I'll take it in the same breath as Jay Wright. Yep. He's pretty awesome.
That works.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Thank you, Kara. Appreciate it. You do a great job. I really appreciate the insight.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Have a good one. Yeah, I think she's so good.
She's very good. She joined us on the Mattress Warehouse hotline.
You can sit there and just talk and say, for whatever reason, they're not scoring. And she breaks it down. Well, this is they changed the way they're defending the pick and roll or whatever. And, yeah.
She's a good listen along with Buck. I miss Phil, but I like Kara. Happy to be joined by our good friend Mike Rizzo, president of baseball operations and GM of the Washington Nationals. In the clubhouse with Mike Rizzo is presented by Burke and Herbert Bank. Unexpectedly different. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Mike's out there on the West Coast. What's your besides the weather, what's your favorite part of the West Coast road trip?
I love L.A. My son's out there, so I get to hang with him. And, San Diego's hard to beat. So, right. Those are two beautiful spots.
Mike,
do you ever find time, or obviously most of your games are at night. Do you ever find time to go to the beach, or are you still working during the day?
I don't go to the beach very often. No, if there's a day off or something on the road trip, possibility. But when there's a game every day, you know, the 7 o'clock games, we're at the on the bus going to the ballpark about 1:30, 2 o'clock. So
right.
It's there's not a whole lot of time. You get up, have a little breakfast, walk around town a little bit, and then you're heading over to the ballpark. So very, very rarely get to the beach unless there's an off day or something like that.
Mike, even though I am worldly and cultured, I've never made it to San Francisco. Is it worth a visit?
Oh, sure. Great food. It's a kind of a refreshing weather. It's often cool, and that marine layer comes in the morning and then leaves. And if nothing else, you got to see the ballpark in San Francisco. It's just awesome. The view of the bay right behind it in right field, it's awesome, and one of the nicest ballparks in all of baseball.
Mm. So, Mike, you're a very positive person, and it's very early in the season. You've only played 23, 24 games, whatever it is. But we still don't like having you on the show when the team's struggling a bit. I don't know how you want to approach this. Usually when we have you on the show, you guys are 7, 8, 9 games up, and now you're trailing by 5.5. What do you attribute it to right now? Is it just the injuries, the lack of hitting? What do you attribute it to?
Well, I think they go hand in hand. The injuries are, we don't even talk about the injuries. The injuries happen. Every team's got injuries. So, these guys are big leaguers, mm-hmm. and they've got to perform. You've got three all-star caliber players that are not in the lineup with Eaton, Rendon, and Murphy. So, obviously that's going to hurt. You've got a really good extra player in Brian Goodwin, who'd be playing every day now with Eaton out, who's hurt. And then you go down and Robles, Victor would be, he'd be playing left field every day if he were healthy, and he's hurt. So it really tests your depth in the organization, your talent level and that type of thing. But, hey, you got to win games. There's nobody feeling sorry for us because we've got guys out. You got to grind out. You got to win. And I think you what do you have to do when your really good players and your regulars are not in the lineup and they're hurt, is you got to really play clean baseball. And the base running mistakes and the defensive mistakes and throwing to the wrong base and those type of things, giving extra outs, running into extra outs, they really are magnified when your lineup is depleted and you're not scoring runs. And it's easy to make a base running mistake when your lineup is hitting on all cylinders and you're scoring 7, 8 runs a game and that type of thing. But when you're scratching for three, four runs a game, you got to play clean baseball, and we haven't done it. So we need to do a better job of that. We've got young players in there that are in situations that they're not accustomed to. So they've got to be learning on the fly. And but you said it right. We're 23 games into this thing. We're trying to tread water till we get some of our big guys back, and then we could get rolling and rip off some wins.
What's the update on Anthony?
Anthony, he fouled that ball off his toe, and it just didn't come around. So we put him on the DL so he can get off it, and he's eligible to come off, I think, next Sunday, and we'll see where he's at. And hopefully he can come off when he's eligible on Sunday after the 10 days. Because with the new 10-day DL rule, you can backdate a DL assignment 3 days, and we have a day off. So hopefully he'll only miss three or four more games, and we'll get him back in the lineup, which is would be a huge uplift for us, because then it not only helps us in the lineup, but also helps us on the bench, because Defoe or Howie Kendrick would be on the bench, what we got him for.
We're going in the clubhouse with Mike Rizzo, Nats President of Baseball Operations and GM. Just to highlight some of the positives, you mentioned base running blunders, but Trey Turner and Michael A. Taylor both off to good starts stealing bases. Do you like the aggressiveness on the base paths?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of our DNA. You know, we're able to manufacture runs by running the bases aggressively and well. And, you know, Michael and Trey, they're great base stealers. Eaton, when he's in the lineup, is a great base stealer. So we should have, you know, a team that runs the bases very well and can manufacture some runs. So, you know, with that said, we don't want to run into outs, but we do want to stay aggressive and do things that push the envelope and, you know, make the other team, you know, worry about our team speed and where we don't have to rely on home runs and, you know, scoring by, you know, in big chunks. We can manufacture things when things aren't, when the lineup's not humming along like it's supposed to, like it is right now.
And the truth is, I know you're a big believer in the back of the baseball card is, you know, I was just looking at the stats. You don't have one hitter in the top 30 in batting average. You would expect guys like Trey Turner, Michael A. Taylor, and Ryan Zimmerman, some of these others, for their batting averages to increase to get on the bases more.
There's no doubt that it's, you know, we go by track record. It's, you know, these guys are in the league because of what they do. And I think at the end of the year, this thing all evens out. We get back to playing, you know, Nationals baseball, which is a, you know, it's a very crisp, good style of baseball. And we're, like I said, we're just trying to stay in sight until we can get some guys healthy, get the lineup back. And our, you know, our starting pitching has been, you know, lights out like it always is. And the back end of our bullpen has been solid. And, you know, we need to find a bridge to the seventh inning, you know, in that sixth inning. And I think we've got some candidates that have emerged that are going to help us. And, get some guys healthy, score some runs, have a little fun, and get through this this tough period of not having our complete roster in place. So everybody goes through it, and I know we're just we look at the rest of our division. Those guys haven't had too many setbacks injury wise, and you know, we think this thing all evens out. So we're feeling we feel confident about what we're doing. We love the team that we have. The guys are in a good mood still, although they're pissed off that we're not having the road trip that we want. But at the end of the day, if you look at this road trip and we can, Tanner and Scherzer can get us a couple wins here in San Francisco, you go home 5-4, which is a pretty good road trip when you consider you're going New York, L.A., and San Francisco. You play a 6-game homestand, and then we're back out on the West Coast playing San Diego and Arizona. So it's a tough road for us.
Yeah, you mentioned the division, Mike. You know, obviously the Marlins are doing what they're doing. They're probably going to win 60 games. But the rest of the division is, you know, you guys are underperforming, but the other three teams that are really playing well, a couple of them are surprised to me. I mean, the Phillies, I knew that they had talent, but I didn't expect the start that they're having. And then the Braves, we knew, had talent, especially younger talent, and they're playing well. So the division's looking like one of the stronger divisions in baseball right now.
Yeah, well, you know, we look at those divisions, our division before the season, and we realized that there was going to be an improvement in all the teams in our division, and including the Mets, who finally get their rotation healthy, and their lineup's been intact and playing pretty well. So it's a division is solid. It's gonna get solid. It's gonna stay solid. It's gonna be a good division for a long time, and right now we're wearing the crown. We're the kings, and everyone's trying to knock us off the throne. And we just got to battle to win the division, play better baseball, and I think at the end of the day, we're the best team, and we feel good about winning the division again.
Mike, we saw Sean Kelly leave the game two nights ago with an arm injury. It appears to be nerve irritation. Do you fear the worst when you see that from a guy who's already had Tommy John surgery twice? And it's a guy we've gotten to know over the past few years, really rooting for him to stay healthy and be able to pitch as much as possible. So that's some upsetting news to see what happened to him the other night.
Yeah, you never want to see a guy walk off the mound, especially a guy with an elbow history like his. We've gone through this before with Sean. You know, it's that ulnar nerve. He's got chips in the elbow that float around and sometimes float on the nerve, and you just can't pitch through it. So we're gonna see him this afternoon and see how he's doing. But we expect a disabled stint for him. Hopefully it's a short term thing, and the rest of the bullpen can pick him up, and you know, until he gets back with us. But you know, Sean's a competitor. He's a warrior. He wants to be out there. He, you know, he pitches through pain and that type of thing. But you know, when you're pitching through that kind of pain and it affects your stuff and you know, your command of the baseball, you know, we have to do what's best for the player. So we'll take a look at him and hopefully it's not as serious as it looked when he walked off.
So you gave AJ Cole opportunities. He ended up being 5-8 for you guys. 110 innings pitched. You know, you gave him a shot at that fifth starter spot, and just didn't work out. So what was the deciding factor on the decision to trade him?
Well, you know, we wanted to give him a chance as a starter. We felt that Hellickson, once he got ready, was a better option for us. He gives us more depth and AJ would be our long man out of the bullpen, and it just didn't go well for him out of the bullpen. You know, he struggled to get ready in time. You know, as a reliever, and his stuff just didn't play up like we thought it would out of the bullpen. So, you know, when you get out there and you know you're giving up runs and you're not helping yourself or your teammates, we thought it was time to make a roster move. And when we brought up a roster player and we had to make room, AJ was the candidate that we decided to designate for assignment. The Yankees had some interest in him, so we dealt him over to there for a player to be named later or cash considerations. And we wish him well. He's a guy we drafted, signed, and developed. And we always wish the best for those guys.
Mike, it's time for the Burke and Herbert Bank fan question of the week. Are you confident in what you saw in Jeremy Hellickson's second start against the Dodgers? That's from our friend Bruce in Bowie.
You know, Jeremy's been through the battles before. He's a veteran, a young veteran, but he's a veteran of a lot of seasons. He knows himself. He knows what type of pitcher he is. You saw the type of guy he is. He's a touch feel finesse right-handed pitcher that has to sink the baseball and spin the breaking ball. We really like his poise and his moxie on the mound. He really was hitting his spots in the game against the Dodgers and pitched a whale of a game for us. We feel confident that he's going to help this team. And like I said, we like the depth down in the minor leagues. After Jeremy, we've got Austin Voth has pitched extremely well for us in AAA, as has Eric Fetty. So we feel good about our starting rotation depth at the big league level and in the minor leagues.
All right, Mike. Well, get another win or two, and then get back home and then put something together here against Arizona, Pittsburgh, and Philly when you get back home to Nats Park and sleep in your own bed.
Sounds good, fellas. Thanks for having me.
All right, bro.
Thanks for the time. As always, that was In the Clubhouse with Mike Rizzo, presented by Burke and Herbert Bank. Unexpectedly different. We're the Junks on 106.7 The Fan.
Right now, of course, draft takes place tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday. And joining us, the founder of the College Football Matrix, the digital number one digital preseason college football magazine with stats, trends, and numbers, it's Dave Bartu. Good morning, Dave.
How's it going, guys?
Doing well. So last time I remember we had you on, correct me if I'm wrong, your big theory with quarterbacks, and I like it, is that they have to elevate their program, right? If you're the quarterback at USC and you do well, so do all of them. But if you're the quarterback at, say, I don't know, maybe Oklahoma State or someplace like that, and you do well and you carry your team, that's a different story.
The quarterback effect.
Yes. Is that right? Is that fair?
Exactly. That is it in a nutshell.
Yeah.
You know, it's trying to, and I noticed this, I think it was 2012 when they announced the NFL rookie, top three, and it was Luck, Wilson, and Griffin. And I'm looking at this, I'm like, okay, these are three guys in my coaching effect that elevated their teams. And so I started thinking, maybe some of these coaches really aren't that great. Maybe they just get on the shoulders of these great quarterbacks, Jeff Tedbridge, and ride these guys to 10, 11 win seasons. And it's really more about the quarterback. And so I started looking at all of the starters in the NFL because, you know, as much as we'd like to talk about the second and third string quarterbacks, other than Nick Foles, we really don't care, right? Mm. It's all about the starters. And so when you're drafting, to me, it's about how can you mitigate risk in your draft picks. And with the quarterback, like you just said, is I think one of the first things when you're looking at these things, if you're a fan, if you're listening, all these guys that are on the quote-unquote draft board as a quarterback, look at each one and just say, did they take their team to another level? Were they responsible every Saturday, like an NFL quarterback is every Sunday, to get out there and lead their team and win football games? And if the answer is no, freaking don't draft them. Mm. Or at least if you're going to, spend a third, fourth, fifth, sixth round pick on them, not wasting it in the early rounds.
So, Dave, what do you make of this headline? I'm just lifting this straight from SBNation.com. If Josh Allen succeeds, his GM will have outsmarted basically all regular humans and the entirety of math itself. Where do you stand on Josh Allen?
I disagree with that entirely because my math, when you go quarterback effect, it's the number one guy in college football company that's in the draft. Okay. He did more with less at Wyoming. What a lot of people, they look at his record and they go, oh, his record wasn't that great. Wyoming is whale poop. It's at the bottom of the ocean. The offensive coordinator, and it's not just the talent at Wyoming. You have to look at the coaching. The defensive coordinator career, bottom 25% in stats. So he has a terrible defensive coordinator. He's got a terrible offensive coordinator. And Wyoming won football games the last 2 years. Look at Wyoming before Josh Allen. So he really did elevate the team. And I've heard, oh, his completion ratio is 56%. Brett Favre's was 57% at Southern Miss. And look what he did at Southern Miss. Personally, the only thing I don't like about Josh Allen is his history of getting hurt. And as we know in the NFL, you get hurt once, they're going to keep targeting that. So that's my only drawback there. But when you start looking at quarterback effect, this is the number one guy in the draft. And as far as the numbers go, I don't think he's outsmarting anybody because, this would be one of the top three guys I would guess or I would target to succeed coming out of the draft.
What about the criticism that when he played Power 5 teams, he didn't fare well?
Just like 30 seconds ago, I said all the talent and coaching around him sucked.
Right.
So, it's really tough. It's hard to measure that. How do you really, there's only so much you can put on a guy. And I think we're at the point right now, we're all overanalyzing this to death, right? There's a good and a bad for everybody. So I think what it comes down to, though, is when you look at all the arguments, there's a lot more negative arguments than positive arguments, and maybe that's just human nature. But I think it goes to really tell you that in spite of all these quarterbacks available in the draft, it's not a very good class for quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm. Next year might be worse. Well, it would be worse. What do you think about Cleveland at one? What should Cleveland at one do? Should they take Barkley? And then, if all these quarterbacks are pretty much the same, in your eyes or their eyes, then you take Barkley one, and then you're still going to get a quarterback at four. But
it's Cleveland, so it's all going to turn out bad, right?
Probably. What would you do, though? What would you do?
Jesus could be quarterback, and they take him, and bam, he'd get hurt instantly, or something would fall apart. So I don't know what you do there. You got the first and the fourth pick. Honestly, I'd do my best to trade down, and I think that's kind of what they're doing. If you notice over the last month, and I try not to pay attention to this so I can just tell stories with numbers, but you notice over the last month, Cleveland, they like Rosen. What's the flavor this week?
Mayfield,
and then last week it was Josh Allen. Oh, we might take two quarterbacks. This is a team, in my opinion, trying to sell itself out of that first spot. Hmm. And so I would try to move back. That would be the first thing I would do is try to move back. Obviously, they need a quarterback, because Taylor isn't going to be it. They've already given up. Well, it was a terrible pick last year. Kaiser had one of the worst quarterback effects coming out of college this century. That was a terrible pick. And, if it was up to me, if I'm just looking at the numbers, and I had to make that pick,
right,
and it's got to be a quarterback, I'm going to go with Allen because of what he did at Wyoming, because everybody else is just kind of, they underperformed where they were at.
Now, obviously, when you look at quarterbacks and you look at their careers, we can argue. I mean, some of the busts, they're obvious, right? Like a Jake Locker, Jamarcus, those are obvious. Others, you know, we kind of went through it. We went through all the quarterbacks since 2000. And, you know, if a guy plays
in the first round,
if a guy plays 15 years, even if he was on four teams, it's hard for me to call that a bust. But all that being said, have you kind of, do you have a number that you've sort of come up with, like your hit ratio? We said if you're basically sort of on stars and teams have done, you know, really, really well drafting these quarterbacks, it's about, looks like about a 33% hit rate on first round quarterbacks. What's your hit rate with your quarterback effect?
Well, with the quarterback effect, what it does is it breaks down the risk. Okay. It tries to target where these guys, you know, and as you just said, most guys are going to bust, right? I mean, if you want to be a smart football fan, tell all your friends these guys are going to suck, because that's usually end up what's going to happen. So in terms of the mitigating risk is, if a quarterback comes out of a, what I call a non-elite recruiter, okay, a non-top 10 recruiter where they don't have that elite talent around them, and they have positive quarterback effect, about a third of those guys are going to be successful starters in the NFL. Okay. Now you go down to, now you go all the way back to the other extreme. If since 2000, if you look at every single quarterback drafted out of these elite schools, okay, out of a LSU, out of an Alabama, out of a USC, out of Ohio State, 91% of these guys, if they didn't elevate their team, basically go 12-0 with their talent, they were gone within 3 years. So one of the first things I look at is the quarterbacks from these elite schools, pretty much check them off. So when we're looking at our list right now, you know, our one quarterback from an elite school that we're looking at right now is Sam Darnold. And he didn't do anything at USC. He didn't elevate USC. And I know a lot of people talk about him as number one as well. So, you know, the numbers say that you take that kind of guy from that program, that's your big bust rate. I think you got to look at it the other way around. How are you trying to mitigate not busting on that pick?
Right. Give me an outlier, though. Give me the, because I can't think of it off the top of my head, but a guy from a big program.
Okay, well, like if I'm Washington, right? Who am I? If I'm a Washington fan, what's the one guy in round three or four that may, you know, the quarterback that maybe we could get? Because Alex Smith isn't going to last a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Richmond's quarterback?
What? Huh? Yeah.
University of Richmond's quarterback?
Pauletta? Okay, now we're talking FCS.
Right,
okay. Okay. Now there's a different little spectrum for those guys. If you look at all of the FCS guys that get one or two first or second round grades, they pan out a lot. Okay. Those are really good risks. But the Richmond guy, his grade is what, 4, 5, 6? He's down there a little ways. Those guys constantly bust. It's almost 100%. So I would avoid him. If I could in the fourth round, if I'm a Washington fan, the one guy I'd be excited about with the biggest upside in terms of quarterback effect, even though he's a small guy, needs a little HGH, gets meat on his bones, I would be looking at Falk at Washington State.
Hmm. Well, what about defensively? Because we all think that the Redskins need a defensive lineman, maybe a linebacker, maybe even the secondary. What do you think is going to turn up there at 13 for them tomorrow?
Now we're going way outside my comfort level. You know what's going to happen is one of these quarterbacks will be sitting there at 13 mm-hmm. that everybody's been talking about. But, you know, I believe in two things at the NFL level, size and speed, okay? And to me, I've always been a best player available in spite of need. And so whatever's there at 13 – you can't coach size, you know. So that's what I'm always looking at. And certainly I think the third factor there is health. I think that's something that's underrated that fans don't talk about a lot because there's not a lot of information on it. But how physically healthy is this guy? Because, you know, you only get him on average for 3 years, and you're hoping to get a guy that lasts a long time. To me, he had to be healthy through college. So that's what I'd be looking for. I wouldn't care whether it's, you know, Washington or any other franchise, you know, is being able to, if I have that need, offensive or defensive line, that's where I'm looking, is size, speed, and health.
Real quick, so let's assume Cleveland takes Josh Allen like you think they might or should, mm-hmm. and then the Giants take Barkley, and then the Jets are sitting there at 3, certainly need a quarterback, and you've got Darnold and Rosen sitting there. Does Rosen fit there, considering the media, because you know he likes to talk. And if you're not good in New York, they're going to let you know it.
And who's our worst quarterback effect guy on the draft board?
Rosen.
Josh Rosen.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little unfair. I mean, he was hurt his sophomore year.
You're a big Josh Rosen guy.
Last year he got hurt. I mean, he hadn't played the games that some of these other guys have played, but I get it.
Oh, no, I agree. And watching him, isn't it hard to watch him and go, how is this guy not going to be brilliant in the NFL?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But we also know, I think we would agree, as outsiders looking in, that at the professional level, it's mental. You know, there's not much that differentiates good from great, good from second string from not having a job. And so while he can seemingly on the field make these throws and do all of this stuff, you know, what did he really do to try to elevate UCLA? And now I know Jim Moore is terrible. He was awful at UCLA, one of the worst head coaches in college football in his tenure, and he should have been fired years ago. But at the same time, other quarterbacks have faced similar situations, like we just talked about. You know, guy at Wyoming doesn't have great coaching. So to me, Rosen, the one guy this keeps reminding me of Jeff George. All the tools, all the size, all the arm, all this, all American. Boom, just couldn't get it done in the NFL. And maybe I'm wrong on Rosen. You know, maybe he's going to be an outlier in this thing. It's not perfect. But to me, I think what he did in college is too much of a risk to spend the money at three.
All right. Real quick, our producer wants me to ask you this. Rank your quarterbacks one through five real quick.
One through five?
Yep. Josh Allen's one.
If I had to take the next guy that has a first-round grade that I think is going to be successful, it's going to be Lamar Jackson. He had zero quarterback effect at Louisville, which is better than most everything else on the board. And then you have later rounds, I like the risk of Falk. Everybody else has negative to very negative quarterback effect in this draft, and I think a lot of people are going to overpay for him in draft position.
Wow. I would have thought you would have Baker Mayfield higher on a quarterback effect. Surprise.
He's about near zero there, too. You know, I just, you know, here and again, though, you have a guy from an elite program, and, you know,
He did a lot of
just scrambling around, throwing the football up,
yep.
You know, and that's one of the bad sides about some of these elite programs, these quarterbacks, is a lot of these jump balls they throw, the guy on the other end is just physically superior, and they come down with a lot of these things. So I think that, you know, Mayfield, again, you have an interesting guy there, but he didn't do anything great. And look at your great quarterbacks. I mean, that's really what you're looking for. You know, and if you look at your top guys, you look at your Roethlisberger, look what he did with Miami. Look what Drew Brees did with Purdue. Look what Aaron Rodgers did with Cal. There's nobody on the draft board at all that makes you go, wow, this guy was great for his program. It is an average at best draft. And if I am drafting in this thing and I need a quarterback, I am trading down as hard and as fast as I can.
All right, great stuff.
Thank you, Dave.
Right.
Dave Bartu joined us in the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. You can check him out, CFB Matrix.
No, I like it. I don't even know if he's right. I like that it's just outside the box thinking.
Luke,
you know,
it's different. He loves that dude.
He's no, hold on.
When I zag and everyone else zigs, I'm being different.
Oh, you zig when everybody else zags.
Yeah, but at least he's got a little strategy behind it. He's got he's got a theory.
He's got fancy numbers.
You're just zigging for the sake of zigging.
Whatever.
Baker didn't do anything great at Oklahoma.
He won a Heisman.
I would argue with the Baker.
He won a Heisman.
And I'm pretty sure that he crapped all over Lamar Jackson last time he was on.
Oh, really?
Now he's his number two quarterback.
Well, he's done his mathematical analysis.
He's doing his homework.
Hey, look, I put Dave Bartu in the, what's the O'Leary
Jonathan
guy's name?
Chris
O'Leary.
O'Leary.
I put him in the Chris dumb. O'Leary pile.
O'Leary's
it's interesting
all over
theories,
it.
But I don't necessarily buy it.
I'm a big O'Leary guy.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.